11:15 here on WGTD.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha Lions Foundation is once again awarding grants to Kenosha County service organizations. To request an application and guidelines, write to the foundation at P.O. Box 654, Kenosha 53141. The deadline for applying is March 15th.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. You're listening to Community Matters, and thank you for tuning in this morning. My name is Joan Rory, and I am here today with the Racine Unified School District Superintendent, Soren Gajewski. So thank you very much, Soren, for meeting with me today.
Thank you for having me on. Lots of great stuff to talk about here.
Oh, well, I like to hear that. Having grown up in Racine with a mother who was a special educator for many, many years with Racine Unified, at a time when our school district was a national model. So you're talking, and you know this community, you've been in the community a while. We're talking about a community who doesn't forget the past so much. Embracing change can be a little difficult, but as an educator myself, I've often said that if you're not embracing change in education, I think you picked the wrong profession, because there's only one real consistent thing about education, and that is change. So today, because we're facing a referendum decision on April 1st, I've asked you to come on and share as much information as you can for the lay persons in this community. Why do we have to have it? What good is it going to do us? Why should we be investing? But Soren, I want to start out, because every educator in their career, it doesn't hurt to ever hear that you were influential in one of your students' lives. So I have to ask, can you share with us your most influential teacher when you were in school, and why?
Well, that's a great question. I definitely would tell you there's so many teachers that were influential, which inspired me at a very early age to want to be a teacher. I'll pick one for sake of answering the question. I will call out my high school. One of my high school teachers, his name is Jim Kitzimbel, and he was he taught a meteorology class. Actually, it was a two-part class, two different semesters. I loved studying weather, and he had. Not only did he have a vast amount of knowledge and passion about the weather as well, but he had what I think always makes a difference for any student, which is he cared very much that I was learning and that I was interested in what he was teaching. And so many conversations with him at the end of the periods, or I would stop there before school. I even stopped there at a professional learning day for staff. I stopped by the school to see him and talk about all kinds of things in addition to. So it's those kinds of relationships that our teachers have with, and our principals and our staff in general, to have with kids, that kind of fosters that that love of learning. Super important component in teaching kids and wanting and inspiring kids to be good students. So that's one of them, but there were a number of other teachers too that I could certainly say.
Sure. Do you think that you were special, or did this teacher treat everyone as if they were his only student?
I would say it was kind of a bit of both. I mean, he's okay. A very likable guy, and he would go on tangents about different things that made you really want to hear what he had to say. But I think he also saw that I had a particular interest in meteorology and talking about the weather. You know, when we had thunderstorms coming, you know, we would talk about,
right,
you know, what horrible things could happen with with the storms or whatever, and the snowstorms and stuff like that. I just think he enjoyed my own interest as well. So that's how it works too. He had probably 150 students that semester, and you know, and a few students stand out, and I probably was one of them.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because like I said, there's not one educator who wouldn't appreciate hearing that they've made an impact in a student's life. So let's talk, first of all, introduction of yourself, who you are, how did you get here, and in this role that you're in right now.
Okay, well, how did I get here? In 2006, I was hired by the district as principal of Jefferson Lighthouse School. And prior to that, I was a teacher. I taught science in Milwaukee Public Schools for about 7 years. And so I wasn't entirely sure what assignment they had for me when I was hired here, but they put me right into a principalship at Jefferson, where we worked on developing the International Baccalaureate Program, which is, I'm delighted to see, has gone from an idea that I was literally Googling on a computer to now a K-12 pathway for our students in this district. And so knowing that early on work that the staff there did is paying off, is, I just absolutely love it. From there, I was asked to take on the role as principal at Mitchell School back in 2011. And was there for 6 years before being asked to help lead other principals and sort of share some ideas, I guess, that were successful for myself at Mitchell with the rest of the district. So I came down to central office and served as deputy chief of schools for, I don't remember anymore if it was 4 years, and then chief academic officer for a little while before our last superintendent called upon me to cover for him. Before he ultimately retired or moved on to another location. And the community and the school board said, we'd like to keep you on in this role. You're doing a good job. And I was thrilled to be able to have that opportunity and to be here talking with you today.
Well, I have major FOMO, and I believe that I didn't realize you were with the district in this capacity for so long. Shame on me for not seeing this rising star coming up through the system. But I, as because it's my show, I get to share. I was one of the technology people that installed the very first computer lab at Jefferson Lighthouse School. And talk about installing technology in a school that was built around the Civil War with one electrical outlet in the room and 20 right. computers. So I've seen the technology growth in our school districts, and it still makes me giggle that we limped along with one electrical outlet in the room. So fantastic. Thank you. So we're talking referendum, because on April 1st, there will be a Wisconsin election, numerous items on our ballot, circuit court judge, we've got alders, city council, we've got school board members, and we also have this Racine Unified proposed referendum. Now, as we go into learning more about that, let's talk about some successes that we're going into this with on a district level. I know that you said some great things are happening. Talk to us a little bit about some district successes. And also, I'm curious, what's our enrollment at Racine Unified? How many students?
Well, I'd say it's approximately 15,500, right okay. in that zone. So, you know, there are lots of great stories that have gone on for years. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, that's, you know, if there are negative stories, those kind of overshadow sometimes. There's a lot of great things that have been going on. But on a broader spectrum, over the last few years, we've been building our youngest students. We've been building in a science of reading approach with our students even before legislation in the state. And we are seeing some really noticeable gains in our youngest kids from 4K into up to third grade and now beyond. And it's really important timing coming out of the pandemic where, you know, the education wasn't the best. And so we are seeing test scores in our youngest kids that are indicating that our reading strength is better than it's been in a long time. And as you know, as a former teacher, if you can have that base level of reading, that competency, you can access the curriculum much better when you get into those middle school years and beyond. And if you cannot read, the rest of it just seems like a waste of your time. And in middle school, it's easy to be distracted as it is. So this is a longer term investment that we will see greater compounding gains on, I believe, in time. And so we've also seen an increase in our graduation rate over the last several years for all of our demographic groups. In fact, our graduation rate, we say it's been the highest in the last 15 years, but I think it actually may be the highest potentially ever. And there's a lot of routes to graduation and a lot of approaches that we take now. It used to be, at least going back to when I was in high school, you graduated and it was kind of good luck. Figure out what's going to happen next. You're going to go on to college. You're going to go into the workforce, whatever. But you had to make sure that was, you know, you're going to make that happen for yourself. We have so many staff and programs that help our kids see that what they're doing in their sophomore, junior, or senior years can translate to that next step. And I think that keeps kids more engaged and focused and puts them on a path to graduation. We are seeing increases in attendance, which is really important coming out of that pandemic time. The kids are showing up to school, and thankfully as well, they're becoming better adjusted. When we first came out of the pandemic, we had some very challenging scenarios as our kids have to interact with live human beings more often. And that's an adjustment, and we're getting better there. So the arrows are going in the right direction. And that kind of brings us toward the main topic, which is we want to keep going in that direction. For many years, the district had conflicting data or data that was maybe going in the wrong direction. We've had our state report card go up now 2 years in a row, which not all school districts can say that, including in our county.
From what to what?
Right off the top of my head, I think we went from 50.5-ish or so to I think we're at 55.9 or 56.9. I don't have
it's
it right.
It's going. Yeah, sorry,
up,
I didn't mean
several points.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
there's
I think
a lot
we went up
of
around 6 points for the last 2 years.
That's incredible.
So we're just about to the meets expectations, which is something that I'm very confident we can accomplish and then continue to grow on from there. We're moving in the right direction versus many years in a row of going in the wrong direction on that report card anyway.
Thank you. And here is me, because it's my show, I'm going to make one correction to what you just shared with us. Former teacher, there's no such thing. I don't know anybody in education that ever stopped doing it. We are always educators. Mm-hmm. Lifelong learners, that's something that we committed to. So, well, that's incredibly exciting on a state level. So we're making progress and it's being noticed. With all of these incredible things comes a price tag. I don't think school budgets and balanced have ever been in the same sentence for a long, long time. What are our budget challenges as you give us this list of accomplishments and challenges? What are we facing as a budget challenge with how we want to move forward?
Right. So I'm going to start with take us back in time a bit. Go back to about 2009. We had legislation in the state government that decoupled public school funding with inflation. So prior to that, school districts could at least count on a inflationary increase to their budgets. At that time, and for reasons I'm not entirely sure, that was decoupled, and it was then left to the legislature and the governor to determine that per pupil allocation at each biennial budget. As it's turned out, when we go back in time and we look at how that allocation has been, it has turned out to be considerably under inflation from 2009 until today. Now, we were able to kind of mask that gap through ESSER funds that we received from the federal government a few years back during the pandemic. And so we were able to balance our budgets using that, as well as utilizing those funds for what they were intended around the pandemic. But coming out of it, we no longer have those. And there was no per pupil increase at all during that time. So now we face a budget deficit going into next year of $24 million. Hmm. we would have about $50 million in our budget today if we always stayed with inflation from 2009. I wouldn't have to be even talking about this. We could just stay on some more exciting topics. But we're there, and we don't have the space any longer to try to continue to be find more efficiencies and do more with less. Last year, we had a $34 million budget deficit that I had to make significant cuts in staff and programs just to balance that. And so going into the future, I just can't continue to cut into that and be able to tell the community that we can continue to move in the direction that we are moving. With these funds, I feel confident that we can at least continue to move forward and build on the successes that I just outlined there.
That's a lot to take in, Soren. How much does it cost per pupil to educate in Wisconsin? Do you, ballpark figure? I remember them always to be a relatively high price tag, but in 2024, 2025, any ballpark figure as to how much it does cost to educate one pupil? That's not, I mean, on average, not special ed, not any of that, just.
Ballpark is about $14,000 on average.
And that hasn't gone up that much, but because it just seems like that was not far from what it was to educate a student many years ago, but so many more demands, technology needs, et cetera. So yeah, well, that's a pretty penny, but you did mention something about ESSER funds, and I did want to ask, because of the budget challenges, we are looking at possible federal funding being frozen.
Mm-hmm.
How concerned are you about that? I know Title I is federal funding. What do we get? Maybe $10 to $15 million a year? I don't know what Unified gets in Title I funding, but oh my gosh, reading intervention, mental health services, English, you know, teaching.
Yeah. So your guesstimate is about what I generally share around title funds. Title I being the greatest amount, about $10 to $15 million is about accurate. It's in that ballpark. And overall, these funds are utilized intentionally to help our students most in need. Again, education is really our best opportunity as a society to give each student the chance to, you know, reach that American dream, if you will, or, you know, have the opportunities to be successful and to be productive citizens and find, you know, happiness in their lives and have, you know, families and be able to provide for them. And so the federal funds have been around supporting our kids that need that extra support, or they're needing to learn English and be able to access the curriculum at a more equitable space. So if that funding is reduced or eliminated, we still need to support all of our students. So that is going to impact our general funds, which come primarily from our state and local taxpayers.
Ooh, it's quite a delicate balance, isn't it? So referenced earlier, I've been part of this community with, since I was born, and Mom was a teacher with Unified forever. So I know the community, and I know that we do like to always reference the past, but now we've got a smaller enrollment. We've closed some schools. What are the costs that are so important that need to be covered? What kind of costs do we have now that we didn't have before? And why do we need this money, Soren?
Well, costs that we didn't have before. That's a wide question. It's hard to exactly answer that. I think if you look generally at society over the years, there are different expectations that we have acquired as a public school system to try to get our students ready to be those productive citizens and be able to take advantage of the learning opportunities. And so we are part of the community. And so, for example, if our community suffers from high unemployment rate, for example, and the experience that then can project onto students. Our schools then react and respond to providing some of those, some of the supports that kids need to be able to be at school, have their tummies full, and have their heads in the right space to be learning. And we want that because we want all of our kids to have that opportunity to be productive citizens in the community in which we live. And I think, you know, more and more as time has gone on, we are looking to our schools. I think about the pandemic period where we were out in days and evenings providing food for a number of our families through the federal program. And so schools are more than just reading, writing, and arithmetic, so to speak. We provide a lot of other supports for our kids. So those expenses have added on, but I also will say, and I think anybody who's listening that runs a business would know that there also is a cost that for our teachers, our educators, and it's a market in of itself. And so how many people are getting into education? How many people are getting are working with our students in all aspects, if it's administration, if it is in our food service, so on and so forth. That market's changed too. It's not the same as it was 15 years ago, or certainly like when I got into education, or maybe when you got into education, there are different competing interests out there. And so we have to respond to somewhat with the market as well, and we have to provide a comparable salary and benefits so that we have the best staff here in Racine, and that we have people that are here to teach the students that we have in Racine Unified. So all of those costs get rolled into ultimately what we need to spend on education today.
Beautifully summarized. I do want to just take this midpoint break to remind our listeners, or if you're just tuning in, that you're listening to Community Matters. And my name is Joan Rory. I am the host, and today's guest, I have Soren Gajewski, who is the superintendent of Racine Public Schools. And we're talking about Racine Unified's challenges, successes, and ultimately the referendum that will be available to vote on April 1st. Now, you just brought up a really good point about staff. And one of my questions was, because it is a competitive industry, and when I was in school, basically they said by this time there will be an inundation of teacher jobs, and you have such job security, but you know, nobody could have predicted the pandemic or how we were going to deal with that, or technology in a classroom today. Is it hard to recruit staff, teachers to Racine and Racine Unified? Is that a challenge, or where do you sit with initial educators and new teachers?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I would say that, I've lived here for 20 years almost, and been a part of the community since I was two, so 46 years. There's my age for everybody. And so it's not really a hard sell for me to see the value of what Racine has. Racine, the lakefront, our downtown is terrific. The location near Milwaukee and Chicago and that sort of thing. There's a lot of great things about our community, the values that we have here. If you're recruiting from far away, we kind of get buried by Milwaukee and Chicago. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the cold weather isn't everybody's favorite. Certainly was not mine this morning. those kinds of things do come at sometimes as make it a little more difficult to hire in Racine. We also are competitive with the Milwaukee suburbs, the Chicago suburbs, and dealing with some of the resources that they have and their community has put into their schools. And in many cases recently with passage of referendum. And you also, when you're teaching in Racine, you have to love children. You have to love to see that what you do every day makes a difference in their lives. And I'm not saying that there are teachers that don't have that in them, but you have to really feel a sense of you want to do this for helping the community. And we have so many of those kinds of teachers here, but they're not. Sometimes people get into it more for content, or maybe it works out with where their spouse is and what type of job they have. Racine has so many teachers that love kids and have been part of this community for a long time. And those aren't super easy to replace. And that's part of all of this as well, is making sure that we have the right kinds of people attracted to coming and working in this community and hopefully staying in this community as I have for a long time.
Well, that's music to my ears, because I kind of consider myself to be one of Racine's biggest cheerleaders. And in order to attract young families, young professionals, we do need a strong school system. And we've been there, we're getting there. I'm loving what I hear about the academies, but let's go back to referendum. What's it going to pay for? I know you said staff.
Yep. Well, 80% of our budget is staff. And so a lot of this is simply to retain the educators that we have that are responsible for this momentum that we have right now. And I guess I'll narrow it down specifically to our literacy work. We are intentional about keeping our class sizes low. We are intentional about having coaches that support those educators. And we have educational assistants that are trained specifically to work with those teachers and those children on literacy skills. That in of itself is so consequential to how the kids experience school from that point on. Last year, we made a lot of cuts, and I stayed away from that area because I could. But I am only going to referendum because I feel I'm in spaces now that I cannot make these kinds of cuts without absolutely impacting early literacy. You mentioned that the academies as well is something we've built up over a decade now that have been vital to helping our students flow into their futures. If it's working right into our businesses in our community or into their future in career and technical, or I'm sorry, college and technical pathways. So we don't want to lose or diminish that or water that down. And then finally, I'll mention this. As people from outside the community, I don't think realize how many choices we have in Racine. You can choose to go into STEAM, the fine arts, international baccalaureate. We have a wonderful Montessori program that is highly sought after. We have these choices there are costs that are associated with those programs that are more expensive than simply having, you know, your basic school. And so all of these things are really advantageous to our community and that are now on the line if I cannot maintain a balanced budget over the next 5 years.
Yeah, which is a good follow-up question, because what if? I know we're not unique in this situation. We're not the only district going to referendum in April. What if it doesn't pass in this community? And this is what I think the community needs to know the most, because I think we stand to lose a great deal. What happens if?
Yeah, first, and you bring up a good point. The state of Wisconsin, when I talked about the decoupling with inflation, that has affected school districts all over the state. 200 referendum last year, a record number of referendum around the state of Wisconsin. We only have 100 districts. and so there are, with about a 65% or so passage rate. So you have districts, rural, urban, in between, that are all going to referendum. It isn't because Racine Unified has mismanaged funds or is doing something exceptionally different. We are with everybody else here. Kenosha Unified next week will be voting on a referendum for their community. Same situation. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee Suburbs, Milwaukee Public Schools, Madison, Green Bay, and on and on and on are all in the same boat. So you said, you know, what happens if we don't pass this? Well, not only do we have next year to consider, but as I look over the next 5 years, I cannot sit here and tell you we will be able to continue the growth that we've been making. In fact, I'd be concerned that we can break even on this. I'm worried about that early literacy education. I'm worried about all of our math programs. I'm worried about our academies. I'm worried about our sports and athletics. I'm very worried about our being able to make sure our schools are safe. We spend a significant amount of funds today to make sure our school is safe to be in, and then when you're in there, that our students can be focused on education, and that it provides a better environment for all. Racine is an outlier, well, I shouldn't say an outlier, but is recognized around the state as using protocols to keep our kids safe. Things like our eval systems, which detect if students were bringing in a weapon. We have support staff on hand to work with students who may not be in the right headspace when they get in. These have been very effective over the last couple of years in keeping large-scale safety issues out of our schools. And so these are things that are all going to be impacted. Meanwhile, we have Microsoft that is right outside, you know, right in my backyard practically. Mm-hmm. And it shows you that we need to prepare our students for a world that we aren't even, cannot keep up with. Even Microsoft is barely keeping up with it.
Right.
And so a situation where we are just trying to take our students and give them the basics and send them home each day, we need to be able to get them ready for the kind of world that's changing if we as a community are going to change with it and bear the fruits of that.
Spot on. And you're having conversations with Microsoft to make sure that we are on the right path and we are turning out qualified people. So that's good to hear. That's good to hear.
Yeah, we are. We are in communications with Microsoft. We also have so many community businesses. You know, SC Johnson, of course, is the big one, and many more. Modine,
sure.
Delta Hawk. We have a number of community businesses that work directly with our high schools to make sure that our programming and skill sets that our kids have are valuable to them either right out of school or with a technical program, like working with their a great partner in Gateway, or going on to a four-year university and beyond and coming back home. We want our kids to come back home.
Right.
Use those skills in the high-tech businesses that are landing here. We have a great opportunity for Racine to have an amazing future, but we got to have the workforce and the young people that are ready for it.
Right. No brain drain here. We've been fighting that for forever in education. We want you to live, learn, play here, work here, and continue, you know, in our community. It just seems like, but bear with me because my time is either it was before COVID or after COVID, but didn't we just have a facilities referendum not too long ago? What was that and why is it different?
Sure. So as we were talking early on about Jefferson Lighthouse and that building was opened in 1899. And we had a building in Janes that was around when President Lincoln was here. We had a pretty aging set of facilities in Racine. And so I guess in a sense, we kicked the can long enough where the price tag on that was quite significant to retrofit or in some cases build new facilities here. And that's what that money was for. And it is legally binding to that. That's what our voters voted on, and we have to spend that money. I cannot use that money to put toward any of the things we've talked about here. So I'm so happy that our so far that referendum money has been toward the buildings. We are coming in on time, under budget. Beautiful buildings that our community can be very proud of. Your money is going right into where it is supposed to. And so when people are coming into our community with Microsoft and many of the other businesses and they drive around town, they're going to get an impression that our community supports and highly values education. And that's going to make a difference for all of us. Now, we have to make sure that when you walk in the doors, that the children are getting the education that our community expects and needs and looks like the facilities that they are walking into. And that's where, with this referendum, it is not aspirational. I am not asking for above and beyond right now. I'm going to let the state work on their funding formulas because they do need to do that. I'm asking for what I can minimally make sure that we're moving in that right direction. We wanted to make sure it was a referendum that was likely to pass. So we're asking for just simply a balanced budget to where we are now, even though we made significant heavy cuts last year alone. So, yeah.
To kind of put it in layman's terms, that last referendum really was to get us into a 21st century learning environments. This referendum will ensure quality staff that is trained and experienced in teaching 21st century, you know, methods and technology. You're preaching to the choir here, because I know that an investment in our school district is what brings people to communities. And we are a destination. Our natives are our biggest critics, and our transplants are our biggest cheerleaders, except for me. I'm a native, and the word that I use for Racine 100% of the time is potential. You know, we have so much potential, and we're chipping away at it. But no, I love the fact that you can differentiate what that referendum was for versus this referendum. Now, again, because I know this community and I know the taxpayers need to hear some concrete numbers. So I'm going to ask you, from a property tax perspective, what are we talking about for an average property owner? What would it look like on their tax bill to support this referendum?
Absolutely. And just a reminder again that I'm also a taxpayer here, and I will be getting that bill as well. and so I wanted to make sure, as I said moments ago, that this was likely to pass. We need this to pass. And so I went with a referendum ask from our community that is simply maintaining this year's current budget, understanding the forces of inflation over the next 5 years. So in terms of how it will hit our tax bill, it will go up approximately $35 per $100,000 of property value. And then we're keeping it basically flat over that next, that five-year period. It doesn't compound. It doesn't go up 35 and then another 35 on top.
Okay.
It's going to go up about $35 per $100,000 and basically stay there over that five-year period. That is still a tax levy that is much below where we were just a few years ago. And I know there are forces out there that, you know, around your property values can go up, and, you know, those sorts of things are hard to quantify exactly. And, you know, those are impacted in some ways by our great school buildings are going to raise our property values too, because our schools are so good. But we tried to keep this very minimal and predictable, so that it is, you know, if you have a $200,000 home, it's $70 a year, you know. So we have
over 5 years, $350. There's my Catholic school math training.
Yeah, it is.
That's a deal. That's a deal.
You can you know, quantify it down to a dime or two a day to support a good quality instruction in our schools over the next 5 years. And hopefully our state will work out some of the kinks, to put it mildly, in our state funding formulas, so that we don't have to continuously look at this gap in from inflation. Now, we're just talking inflation, not necessarily some of the costs that we've incurred.
Sure.
That are above and beyond inflation. We're working through that.
I want you to answer this question, and I hope it's not putting you on the spot. And I don't have children in the district. I don't have grandchildren in the district. Why is it important for me to support a referendum vote of yes?
Yeah, with my last one being in high school here, I'm a couple years off from also saying the same thing. And it goes to, I think, a lot of what we talked about in this interview, which is, you know, what kind of community do we want to live in? We live in a community. We've chosen to live together for lots of really good reasons. And, you know, I think about this. I've used this example. When I go to the doctor or the emergency room, and I am not feeling well, I am putting my 100% trust in the individuals that are around me to take care of me. I have no point in time am I going to ask for their bios or their transcripts or something. I need them to be good. I'm trusting them right now. And I think we all can relate to those types of scenarios. We live together because we benefit together. And having our young people grow up to be productive, knowledgeable citizens that are more likely than to earn a good living income, buy a home in our community, and stay here. It benefits all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Kids have a good education, and that they stay here in our community, from just driving on our streets to going to the doctor or going to the grocery store or wherever, whatever you do, we all benefit by having an educated community. So I don't know how I'd answer it beyond that.
Well, you nailed it.
I think that's why we choose to live together. And if we don't care about our neighbor, that's very concerning. And I would much, much rather pay money for our schools than to pay money for incarceration and that sort of thing. I mean, that cost is far worse than this. And
agreed.
So I think it's pretty easy. But yeah, I do get asked that question. And that, to me, that's what the answer is.
Fabulous answer. Soren, where can people get more information? Are there any in face-to-face or public listening sessions? I know Racine Unified's website is loaded, which I'm going to make a comment right here, right now. Kudos on the social media for Racine Unified. How fun and engaging your social media person is, especially when it comes to inclement weather, which we've experienced a few times this week. But I see so many people just chiming in, and it's me. I'm following because it's funny. You know, like I said, I don't have any kids, but congratulations on a very strong, fun, and informative social media presence. Where can we find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, I would direct everybody to our website, and that'll get you pretty much anything you want to know. There are going to be some mailers coming out that will give people kind of the gist of this. Social media, there's a number of video clips, and including my own self, which I heard it turned out well, but
it's a good video. I watched it. It's a great video.
I don't
video.
Always enjoy going in front of the camera like that, but I hope that provides some information. But yeah, we have a mailer that much of our community should be getting. I know you can't hear it on the radio here, but it is, this is RUSD. It is a community report that also shows kind of what we're doing, how we're doing here in the district, as well as the situation with our finances. So those are the primary ways. I do have a couple of town halls that are coming up. The dates are not on the top of my head at the moment, but they're coming up in March.
And they'll be on the website, probably.
They'll be on the website, and we'll be posting those out. And then just one comment about the social media with the weather and such. We all have a great time with that. I feel like, I don't know if I'll out his name out there, but, if he appeared on a late night talk show because of this, it would not surprise me. He's got a great sense of humor and has made
it. I wouldn't be surprised either. He's got a following.
He's got quite a following, and he's made it fun. And weather closings are never easy calls.
Nope.
You can't win on those situations. At the end, we kind of err on making sure people are safe, but he handled those really well, and it's a lot of fun.
Soren Gajewski, what a pleasure meeting with you, learning from you. My name is Joan Rory. I'm the host of your Community Matters, and I'd like to thank Racine Superintendent Soren Gajewski for sharing information on the upcoming referendum, because the more you know, the better informed your vote is, and it's time to step up to the plate for our students and our community, and I hope that you will take opportunity to find out some of the information and make an informed vote. So once again, thank you. My name is Joan Rory. This is Community Matters on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. And my guest today has been Soren Gajewski, Racine Unified Superintendent. Thank you so much for taking the time in a busy, busy day to share with us.
My pleasure, Joan. It was great to be able to share this with you. And anytime you'd like me to speak, I'd be happy to do it.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, February 22nd at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast Cartoon Shows on the Radio, We're featuring Looney Tunes and honoring Mel Blanc. We will be broadcasting live from the Salem School District on Highway 83, just south of Highway 50. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Brown Ulster Performing Arts Foundation and also the Salem School District. The Radio Theater, Saturday morning, February 22nd at 11:15 here on WGTD.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events.